Tēnā koutou katoa and hello everybody. Welcome to the Lentil Intervention Podcast. My name is Ben Adelberg and I'm coming to you from Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland. Tēnei ka mihi ke te mana whenua o Aotearoa. And we acknowledge the local tribal authorities of New Zealand.
And g'day, I'm Emma Strutt and I'm currently coming to you from Darrumbal Country in Queensland. Before we dive into our conversation today, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. And finally, if you enjoy this poddy, please subscribe, like, share or comment on our social media and consider buying us a coffee if you'd like to help support our work. Now on with the show.
Fizzing would be an absolute understatement as to how I feel right now. It's an absolute privilege to have Damien on the show for what will be a hugely important conversation. And based on Damien's background, I suspect we will have a bunch of new listeners from our trail and ultra running community. So to you, I say welcome. And if this episode does indeed tickle your interest, subscribe to the podcast and listen to more of our episodes to not only increase your awareness of what is currently happening around us, but find inspiration from our amazing past and future guests.
That's right. So we are super pumped to be speaking with Damien Hall today, who is a record-breaking ultramarathon runner, a coach, a journalist, a best-selling author, an activist. Honestly, the list goes on. It's a very extensive resume that we're dealing with here. And today we are so looking forward to bringing listeners a conversation about Damien's incredible achievements, his latest book, and his tireless activism within the environmental space. Folks, we've got a true legend of the running world joining us. So without further ado, Damien, thank you so much for joining us.
Yikes. Crikey. Thank you, Ben and Emma. Thank you ever so much for having me on. I hope I can live up to that. Was that, I don't know where you got all that. Was that really me? But thank you. Thank you.
Well, Damien, thank you so much for making the time. We don't normally have or often have guests from outside Australia and New Zealand because as we've just explained offline, time zones is sometimes a bit of a mess. But for me personally, as an environmentalist and a part-time dabbler in trail ultra marathons, you are someone that hugely inspires me.
And I relate because you're a tea lover. So, you know, adding a little 2 cents there.
Well, there we go. So let's first kick off a little bit about yourself, your background. Tell us how, you know, a little bit about yourself.
Well, you may or may not be surprised to learn. I got seriously into, I suppose, trail running or ultra marathon running. But when I really think about it, so some of the seeds of that were planted down under because I lived in Sydney for many years. Actually, I'm technically an Australian citizen, although I keep that quiet when the ashes are on and don't feel Australian then. But I probably the seed, the first, well, yeah, I guess I was raised a certain way, but actually visiting Tasmania was one of the first times I really sort of got that sense of almost environmental injustice of what was going on with the incredible trees down there. It was the Styx Valley at the time. This is back in about 2003, 2004. But then also, I was trying to think, you know, when did I first hear about ultramarathons? And it may have been, I hiked in New Zealand, South Island. I hiked the Kepler track, which again would have been 2003, I think. And I was feeling really pleased with myself, did it on what I thought was really quickly. And then towards the end somewhere, or when I'd finished, a local sort of said, oh, yeah, people run that in a day. And I remember thinking, what? You know, how is that even possible? Now, it did take a few more years for me to sort of properly discover ultramarathons and trail running. But, yeah, a couple of seeds were definitely planted when I was down there. So I guess to get us up to date, I suppose in about, when was it, 2012, 2011, I think I was back in the UK, did my first half marathon, loved it.
Dressed as a toilet the next year. Apparently.
Dressed as a, I was hoping you hadn't done your research. I didn't have to go over that again. Technically, it was actually my first marathon that I did dressed as a toilet. And yes, yes, I did look a bit flushed.
The puns that was, begin.
Well, I wish the pun, that was what people in the crowd often shouted out. I wish there'd been a bit more variety. It was kind of funny, the first two or three times. And then of course, right near the end, you really need the toilet and it's, the irony is too painful that you're dressed as a toilet and can't go. But yeah, 2012, first marathon, first ultra marathon, because I'm just fascinated in this distance thing of, well, if you can run that far, can you run a bit further? Can you run a bit further? Did my first ultra marathon 2012. And from there, yeah, I was just jumping up the distances, just fascinated in exploring, could I do it? What's it like? What do you need? How do you train? How do you do it? How do you execute these things? What incredible scenery can you run through? And yeah, just got really carried away. And 4 years later, I was in the GB trail running team at 40, I think I was. And yeah, it's just carried on there. I suppose I've done UTMB a few times and broken some records here in the UK on sort of long trails and FKT type stuff. And just got carried away. And it hasn't, I sometimes think, you know, is it some form of midlife crisis? But if it is, I can't shake it off. It's not going away. It's been over 10 years now.
Now, for our non-runners of the potty, I just need to elaborate a little bit on your trail running Palmares, because it is impressive. You've won 11 ultras, and we're not talking about, so Kepler, the Kepler Ultra, which sells out in minutes, literally. It's one of our most popular ultras in New Zealand. That's only 62, 64 Ks. You've won Monster Ultras, 268-mile, the Spine Race. You've placed fifth at UTMB. That's a massive, and we'll touch on UTMB a little bit later, I'm sure. And also very recently, fourth at the Tour de Géant, 330 kilometers. So when you say you've slowly increased and pushed yourself, you've gone massive. And also a number of FKTs. FKT stands for fastest known times. And also the only DNF that we celebrate in the running community, DNF at the Barclay Marathon. That's a massive accomplishment to get in, to attempt. I think you did four laps. You finished four?
Yes. I got on to the fifth loop. I started a fifth loop. I didn't get very far at all. But that apparently meant I was in. So 17 people have finished it ever.
Yeah.
But yeah. 19 people have started a fifth loop. So I'm in that exclusive little group of two who have started a fifth loop without ever finishing one. So I'm both proud and embarrassed at the same time.
No, I would only be proud just to be there, to get to the fifth lap. Honestly, it's I mean, this would be a podcast on its own. So let's not derail this conversation. But yeah, I think you know, those that do know about Barclay Marathons would certainly be most impressed about it. So yeah, just wanted to throw that in.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. I mean, along the way, there've been plenty of mishaps and mistakes and wonky and hilarious performances and moments, but it's a wonderful sport, and it's just full of adventure, and I've made great friends, and yeah, really, you know, the word addictive doesn't sound like a great word a lot of the time, but I just found this world and just thought, this is amazing, this is for me, that just hasn't gone at all.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your activism, because I think this is going to set the scene with a lot of things that we're going to talk about. But you're a member of a lot of amazing organizations. You're an ambassador for Protect Our Winters. But one of the quotes that I love that I read in a more recent book that we'll talk about as well is, you know, being an activist is not necessarily about gluing yourself to the tarmac or gluing yourself to a road. But tell us a little bit about what sparked that whole activism side of things.
My more recent sort of feelings and sense of urgency and sense of I can't just sort of stand by anymore, it probably happened in 2019 when we had the Extinction Rebellion protests in London here, which were really, really impressive and really caught people's attention and imagination. And you could see they were really well thought through. They weren't kind of, I don't know, a lot of sort of drunken, violent protests or anything. They were very well considered, that the, you know, people were dressed up, singing songs, banners. There was a massive pink boat on a roundabout in the middle of London that had stopped the traffic. And their message was clear as well, you know, tell the truth, you know, we're pretty much out of time. We need action now. And I think I've increasingly met other people who felt galvanized by that. And at the same time, I had two friends, Dan Lawson and Charlotte, his wife Charlotte, who in the running world, they started off a group called Rerun Clothing. And they were just sort of letting people know about all the T-shirt waste at races. I don't know if it's exactly the same down there, but almost any race you do here, or at least a year or two ago, you just get a free t-shirt at the end, you know, and then you end up with a drawer full of free t-shirts and you don't really think much of it. But actually quite a bit of environmental impact went into that, to creating them. And then also they just end up as waste often, because we go, oh, I've had that t-shirt 3 years and not worn it, and because it's a horrible color, and I'll just throw it in the bin. But if thousands of us are doing that, it's terrible. And then also the shoes as well, realizing that, yeah, especially companies who say you should only wear your shoe for 300 miles, was that sort of 500k-ish, and then throw them away before the shoe injures you. And of course they want that, because they want you to buy the next shoe. And on top of that, they're bringing out a new version anyway that's even better and going to make you run faster. So that they got me thinking about, oh, okay, hold on. Running is part of the problem, actually. You think of running, I think, especially trail running, is this quite innocent, you know, simple thing where you just put on a pair of running shoes and off you go into the woods and up the mountains and you know, what harm can you be doing? But actually, our kit is kind of, well, horrendous. And a lot of these companies are actually horrendous too. And then I guess it just got me thinking, analyzing myself as an athlete. And at the time, yeah, I was probably flying to 3 races a year, going on Instagram when I had new kit from a sponsor and going, look at this, everyone, without really thinking of how I was embroiled, I suppose, in the problem, the sort of overconsumption crisis, which, you know, just all consumption has a footprint. So they really got me thinking. And then I did voice my concerns on social media, and you straight away saw that some people were totally on board and some people weren't. And I was quite troubled by that. I just thought all trail runners would automatically care, you know, and be upset about what was happening in the world. But at the same time, I'd had a book out, and the publisher, the commissioning editor, Kirsty Reed, she really encouraged me to sort of do a follow-up book on that topic of, like, how bad is running ultimately, you know, what aspects of it contribute to the problem. So went away and researched that for about a year. That's called, came out about a year ago today, actually. What's it called? We Can't Run Away From This. I looked in depth at the sportswear industry and then events. So running events will be the biggest problem overall. And most of that comes from participant travel to those events. And especially if flights are involved. So that was interesting to see the huge impact there. And then the third thing is probably our fueling. I think most people know now, hopefully. Yeah, I mean, the fewer animal products you use, especially the red meats, the lower your footprint will be. So those were the three main areas I looked into.
All right, so you've outlined a whole bunch of issues there. Obviously, with any sport, there's going to be some problems in terms of climate footprint. But you could, I suppose, you could argue within the trail running space, compared to some other sports, you can be seen as quite climate progressive at times. So could you talk us through maybe some positive initiatives or positive takeaways you found in your research there?
Yeah, for a while there, researching the book, I got quite gloomy, quite depressed, you know, partly because I was part of the problem without really realizing, you know, as any runner will be, or any sports person, well, any most people in the world, to be honest. And I did get quite fed up, and I had to sort of take unplanned days off because I was just getting fed up, especially with the sportswear stuff, if I'm honest. The greenwashing, I suppose, the big companies who sort of pretend they're doing something good, and really they're not, or that's just the smallest part of what they're doing. But over time, I started to come back round, and you realized, well, there are some brands. It's never quite, no one's perfect. No brand is perfect. No event is perfect. But there are people. There are a lot of people out there trying to. I was going to say correct things. That's probably not the right thing, but I guess mitigate the damage or spread awareness. And especially I think in trail running, we are, it's a bit of a cliche maybe, but we're more likely to be out on the trails and the mountains, and we're more likely to care. I think that was really clear. I think we're ahead of, say, the road running scene, certainly in Europe anyway. in fact, one sustainability manager for a huge event here said, we, if in doubt, we look to trail running and what are they doing? You know, just for example, you know, because we're sort of carrying our own drinks around on a race, usually there's less need for cups for us, for example, you know, the plastic waste. So we are ultra and trail running in Europe, at least is sort of a little bit ahead of the road running. And then that's still probably ahead of some other sports, like maybe cycling and triathlon. But I must say, actually, I've made some good friends, some Olympians actually over here who were all water sports people, and they seem to have been well ahead of the curve. They were on about this years ago. So it is interesting watching different sports, you know, sort of the penny drops at different times to different sports almost. But you would expect it to be the more nature based sports to understand it sooner. I found inspiring people. One of the classics is, I don't know if your listeners will have heard of, say, Dakota Jones in America. He's got famous now for cycling a huge distances to his races. It's not possible for everyone, but he's doing some great things with his Footprints running camp, which is worth a look up on Instagram. In Europe, Kilian Jornet is doing some inspiring things. He has his Kilian Jornet Foundation, but he also has this sort of barely publicized group called the Athlete Climate Academy, where he just tries to inform. You get experts, have workshops and podcasts to try and inform other runners or anyone, you know, about what's going on and help them, give them the courage to speak up. And yeah, there were several organizations that I've sort of since joined, such as Champions for Earth, who are these mostly water sports based people who are really inspiring. And then Eco Athletes in America. And there's Protect Our Winters, you mentioned. And they're more from, as you might imagine, a sort of, you know, snow sports background. And they've been ahead of the curve too. And then I've got friends actually a friend of mine, Jim Mann, started a group called Trees Not Tees, which was simply, to arrange, he was already planting trees and then he just suddenly twigged. He could come up with this little scheme where if you sign up for a race, instead of getting a t-shirt, you can just click a button and instead you could have a tree planted. It's almost exactly the same cost, £2 or £3, but it's free to the race. So, you know, that's been a wild success. That doesn't solve everything. And we can get a bit carried away with maybe tree planting, think that'll solve everything, but it's a big part of the solution. So, yeah, I was finding positive things by the end, which was a huge relief because it was, I was getting quite fed up and depressed. But yeah, I think I came out of it. I went into it thinking running is terrible and the problem, and came out of it thinking actually running is finding solutions and is getting somewhere.
Now, one thing you did highlight in the book is the impact that events have. Because at the end of the day, the events collectively just create so much more of a footprint in one collective. And it's been well publicized, you know, just a month ago, UTMB, there's been a bit of irony around the event organization, you know, trying to take some steps in one direction, but then seemingly taking 10 steps back. You boycotted the race. Some other athletes did as well. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I guess it goes back to about 18 months ago. Me and some other runners formed a group called the Green Runners, there's over 1,000 of us now. But we joined in with something called the Game Changer Sponsorship Pledge, and really that came from football or soccer, as you call it, where sports washing and high carbon sponsors are just rampant. In the sport, they pretty much control the sport, or they control the big teams, and you know, they have stadiums named after them, they're on the shirts, and they were trying to say, hold on, you know, this is not okay. Sports washing, these industries are doing a huge amount of harm, but they're trying to distract us and pretend they're doing good by, you know, getting into sport and helping sport. We've seen it in cycling over here as well, and you've definitely had some cases in Australia, I believe, with I think it was the netball team, I believe, from memory.
And the All Blacks are sponsored by Ineos as well.
Oh gosh, right. Okay, yep. Blimey.
Yeah. So
yeah. And even under this sponsorship pledge, actually, yeah, Qantas would count as a high carbon sponsor. So you could debate. So their definition is fossil fuels, airlines and airports, banks that fund fossil fuels and car manufacturers. So, you know, and we could all debate which ones of those really belong there. And car manufacturers probably is the more borderline, or the trickier one, because so many of us still have private vehicles. So it's a bit more of an awkward one. But basically, UTMB that had always had sportswear sponsorship. And for those who don't know, that's our biggest race, really. That's the big one. They suddenly seem to change their name to the Dacia UTMB. And Dacia is a car manufacturer in Europe. I'd hardly heard of them, but it was suddenly like, hold on, our biggest race, not only is their headline sponsor, you know, they've changed their name. It's the, you know, and yeah, we had some discussions, you know, in WhatsApp groups and privately, and including, yeah, with some of, yeah, people like Killian Jornet and people like that, and the pro trail runners. We had some good discussions online, and, you know, and people felt differently, but, and yeah, most of us do have cars, and some of the top athletes have had car sponsors in the past. But we still thought it was just too important to ignore. And it's like, I think we had to draw a line in the sand almost and say that that's not okay in our sport. We hadn't really seen it in trail running till then or been aware of it. It is already quite big in road running in America, actually, quite a lot of the big road marathons. And also the Berlin Marathon is the BMW Berlin Marathon. But it hadn't really been right in front of us in trail running, and then for it to be on the biggest race. So we started a petition. I decided, to commit to sort of not running the Mont Blanc races while they had a high carbon sponsor. I didn't know how many years they'd signed the deal. I think it's 3. But you know, there are other races. I've done it lots of times. I don't think anyone else should feel bad for doing those races. They're still incredible experiences. But yeah, we got a petition going. We'd never done anything like this before. And it suddenly, within a week, it had 2,000 signatures from, I think it's 60 countries and 1,000 of them in France. A week or two later, yeah, we're approaching 3,000. But also what was incredible, and to their credit, UTMB reached out to us and said, okay, you know, come and tell us your concerns. We'll talk about it, which we weren't expecting. So we've had two, I always hesitate before I use the word productive, but we've had two good discussions with them where I think people have been, you know, frank and honest about where they stand. But I think there are some areas we can work with them. But we are going to make the same noises again next year because it's unlikely they'll drop their sponsor right now. So, yeah, I mean, that was maybe a new chapter for the Green Runners. But it was a new chapter for trail running, I think. Like, you know, to have one of the biggest races have a high carbon, a headline high carbon sponsor. And not, you know, not everyone agrees that we should go after them or go after them for that reason, because the other problem with UTMB is it's become this global, you know, I think it has 39 races now globally. And I think the system they currently have really encourages flights. So they've just launched a race in Mauritius, for example. Now, if it's, I don't know, if it's 90% local people doing that race, then great. You know, that's fantastic. But it almost definitely won't be. It'll be lots of people flying to Mauritius. And I'm not condemning flights altogether. I did fly this year, the one flight I've taken in 4 years for running. I don't think individuals should feel too awful for occasional flights. But the message, you know, creating a system that kind of relies on lots of people to fly all around the world isn't the right message at all, I think. And it contradicts their other messaging if you click on their sustainability policy and stuff. So, we just thought it was time to stand up and make a fuss about that.
You're obviously walking your talk here, but in your book, and I've seen this term floating around online a little bit as well for yourself, you call yourself a climate hypocrite. And I've got to agree with you, you know, I'm one as well. It's kind of hard not to be in the modern world. But why brand yourself as that? Why take ownership of that term that's often kind of flung around by the naysayers?
I mean, it's partly to kind of take the sting out of it a bit. And like, if I can go around calling myself a climate hypocrite, then it doesn't, you know, and it literally happened that people have gone, you're a hypocrite. And I'll go, yep, literally says that on my biography. Now, that doesn't mean, I carry on as before. Like, you know, I've turned vegan. I've made all the big lifestyle changes I think I can make. And we are happy to go into them if you like. But like you say there, like, it's inevitable because we'll all have some level of footprint. I think anyone who cares about this will have reduced their footprint or be reducing their footprint, you know, to what's feasible. But I mean, it's not fair to expect us to, I suppose, never fly or never get in a car or never eat. You know, some people, you know, aren't going to be giving up meat and dairy. And that's okay. But globally, we massively have to reduce that. And what scares me a bit is like the fear of being imperfect. So everyone's going to be imperfect. So I also like the phrase kind of imperfect activism. So we can't wait till we're perfect because it's going to be too late. And you can't be perfect. Like, you literally have to sort of live in the woods and exist on, you know, rainwater and forage mushrooms. Even then, if you cook them, you know, that's going to be some emissions. So it's, you know, it's not a realistic lifestyle. Zero emissions is not currently realistic lifestyle, you know, without massive government sort of intervention and changes. I think anyone I know or anyone who cares has probably done the three or four main things they can do or reduced those key areas, which while we're on it, I suppose is travel, your diet, the energy for your home, and basically the stuff you buy, because anything that's sort of created will have some sort of footprint. Those are the four main areas. Oh, and there's another big area is sort of your money, actually. Like, is your bank, you know, is your bank into fossil, you know, are they funding fossil fuels or maybe a pension? And if so, yeah, I moved out to a much more ethical one and it wasn't, yeah, it wasn't as, I put it off for months and months, but it was far more straightforward than I anticipated. And honestly, you just feel better. You feel better when you've done little things like that, that are actually quite big things. Even when we've done all these things, like, yeah, I've switched, I've got an EV vehicle, I've got a, you know, renewable energy for our home, even all those things, my footprint is still probably six to eight tons. The one flight I took this year won't have helped, but that's still significant. Even if we care and we do stuff, we'll still be a little part of the problem without massive, you know, government help. And I'm less in touch with what's happening down there now, but up here our government is doing the opposite of that at the moment, because we have an election coming up and they're worried they'll lose, so they're sort of trying to rally support. But I've got a bit waffly, but hopefully that answered your question.
I think change is such a key term here, because it's from where you are to just, as long as you're making a progressive step, that's a start. Because like you say, that fear of being imperfect, if that's going to stop you from doing anything, all these things you've spoken about, including ethical investing, we've covered in our previous episodes. And we always say, you know, a small change can amount to a lot if we're all doing something. By choice, I don't own a vehicle and I haven't for the last 5 years. Pain in the butt trying to get to trail running. I'm going to say, living in the middle of a city. I did UTMB this year. I flew. But I also jointly justified that with seeing family I hadn't seen, as all my family lives across Europe. So, you know, but is that still being a hypocrite? Yeah, sure. I still did 4 long haul flights to get from New Zealand to Europe and then crossing across Europe. So does that mean make me bad? But plant-based diet, you know, no vehicle. It's, if you're making some change, then if I'm still going to fly anyway, those other changes are making that impact. And I think the lesson to our listeners we try and continually impart is you've got to start somewhere and just continually look to make small improvements. And that's enough. But, you know, we talk about the impact that trail running events have. And I agree. In some instances, very progressive. A lot of trail runners now are trail running events cupless. And I think those in 2023 that still have cups, I think you're now stuck in the old ages. What are we doing? You know, we're carrying our own reusable cup. It's easy. But then just announced today, Soccer World Cup 2030, two continents, three continents, 6 countries. Have we lost our shit?
Yeah, and again, FIFA sort of talk about being net zero and sustainability. Yeah, and then they do this, and the World Cup before that, coming up sooner, is all three North American countries, so Canada to Mexico, and it could be too hot to play in various places, as well as all the travel, which will be flights. So yeah, that is hugely frustrating. And Mike Berners-Lee, who's kind of the expert in Britain anyway on footprints, said that the previous World Cup, he estimated, was the biggest carbon event outside of war, the biggest carbon event ever.
Surely Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, these massive World Cups, surely at some point we've got to draw a line. Yeah, I know it also has other social benefits, entertainment, you know, bringing communities together. It does also do that. But how many Olympic Games or Soccer World Cups have built stadiums, amount of concrete, steel, all that, that then just stands empty and unused? You know, it's at some point.
Well, that's when change. Yeah, I mean, that's when I guess you look at your own footprint and think, well, I've done all these, like you mentioned, you've made sacrifices, you've done all these things to reduce your footprint, and then you kind of look over there and go, well, hold on, I've done. How come you're doing? So that's why I would say, yeah, think about the three or four main things you can do for your own footprint. But actually, I'd rather you got out on the street and protested, voted a certain way, emailed your MP, made a fuss about. These more systemic, we call it sort of nudging the system for system changes. I mean, that is not okay. What FIFA are doing for the next two men's World Cups, definitely not okay. And it's totally, it's totally the opposite of what we need to do. And normally with those things, it will be the travel, the amount of flights that will take place. But the irony is, it may be too hot in North America. It may be too hot to play some of these games. There was a American marathon, I think last week or in the last 2 weeks, that got cancelled because it was too hot to run. So running is massively being impacted. And it's kind of up to us maybe to make a song and dance and make a fuss about it. And I guess the media too. I know you've got a similar problem down there where certain media figures, I guess billionaire sort of press barons. It's not really in the interest to report this stuff necessarily. So it's not getting the coverage. So it's not necessarily getting through to, certain demographics. I think, if you follow people online, then you can get more of the truth. Essentially follow climate scientists, you'll get the truth. But the problem is the media. The media isn't necessarily. And I hate sort of saying that because I sound conspiratorial, like I'm into flat Earth stuff or something like that. But the mainstream media in Britain anyway, and I guess down there because there's one figure who is dominates both, and in America, who we know is skeptical about this stuff, skeptical about science ultimately. So that's a huge frustration. For a lot of us, I've got gloomy again. but sport, I mean, that's what, but also, and this is what we tried to say to UTMB, sport is such a big platform. So many people are interested in sport. It crosses all the demographics, all the boundaries, I think. And so if a message can come through sport, it can be so powerful. Like so many people watch the World Cup and the Olympics. They're the two biggest global events, possibly, I think they are. So if messages can come out through that, if they could undo that decision or that's more powerful than, I don't know, I can't think of anything more powerful, really.
And there lies the problem, though, because these events cost a lot of money. And it's ironic that an event like the Olympics, where at your peak performance, is sponsored by the McDonald's, the Coca-Colas and so on. And, we've spoken about Ineos, you look at cycling, UAE, Bahrain, Victoria, it's like all fueled by fossil fuels, basically. But this is where the money comes from to allow us, professional athletes to use that as the platform, or they build new stadiums, or they facilitate. I mean, there is a positive. Yes, we can call it greenwashing and all that, but it does happen. And without that money, if we don't have those events, I mean, do we not find ourselves in that conundrum, though?
No, it's a great question. And I remember when I traveled in Latin America before I was aware of probably the impact of flights. I remember seeing a lot of Coca-Cola had built a lot of little football pitches in Brazil. And you kind of thought, well, that football pitch, that what would those kids be doing maybe if Coca-Cola hadn't built this football pitch? So it's not totally black and white. However, I think I do agree with the game changer sponsorship pledge where you draw a line under the fossil fuel. The fossil fuel companies, the high carbon companies, and say, actually, no, it's not okay. We're not gonna take your money. I think FIFA make millions, if not billions. I don't think they would struggle for sponsors or for funding. And yeah, that is an organization with a history of corruption. You know, well detailed. There are Netflix programs about it. The Olympics too. I know less about the governance of the Olympics, but yeah, they've had their issues in the past. Yeah, no, it is a tricky one. I think I would draw the line. I would say, so technically, Coca-Cola, they are the biggest plastic polluter in the world, but technically they're not on that high carbon list. I'm not endorsing Coca-Cola for a second, but I suppose for now I would concentrate on the high end. Let's not have them in the sport.
You know, usually I recommend to a lot of athletes, especially in the trail running community in New Zealand, for example, is support the local community events like the Kepler Ultra that we mentioned earlier. It's run by the community, the local community, local sponsors, local products, and the money is going back into that community. So it's benefiting them. We've got epic races. You know, when you look at UTMB, co-owned by Ironman, we know it's a corporation. We know the money doesn't go back into the community necessarily. It might a little bit, but not as much. So, you know, there's one way of looking at that is choose your events that you know will directly impact back that local community and actually benefit them, jobs and all that kind of good stuff. And ironically, those are the better run events because the whole community gets behind it. And you've got 100 volunteers at each age station because they all want to be a part of it. So, you know, there are ways of how we can choose to spend our money in an event now that we're focusing back directly on trail running. But it's the same thing with a lot of other events as well.
No, I like that. That's a nice way to think of it. And then local events, yeah, get better as well and more exciting to be a part of. And you would think everyone benefits from that. So yeah, no, I like that.
And I mean, you talk about the influence of sports and sporting events, but if you stop and think about the potential influence of an individual athlete. Like there's a lot of positives that can be done if athletes start to speak up and use their voice and advocate for climate friendly events. Like as far as people in the public eye, athletes are quite influential.
Well, when I was chatting to Eco Athletes, this American organization, they showed me some research that suggested athletes are the most, or sports people are the most influential people of our time, which was kind of, I mean, I'm in a niche sport with a moderate following, but was still terrifying, but empowering as well. And made me think, well, I can't be quiet on this. I've got to carry on. And I definitely, I do have some understanding, frustration, like understanding is not the word I'm looking for. Some frustration with some fellow athletes actually who do actually make very thoughtful decisions but don't talk about it publicly. But I guess, well, we know actually with sports people there are three things that hold them back. Again, some more research by Eco Athletes and they said it's, yeah, the fear of being called a hypocrite. And for American athletes anyway, sometimes they say, well, it's too sciencey or it's too political to speak out. But I think the hypocrite one is probably the big one. So yeah, I know athletes and with the UTMB thing, I contacted most of the elite athletes who were going to be there. Now, some of them I had no relationship with, so it may have felt like spam. They may not have even seen the message, but some of them I knew a bit. Some of them come from your part of the world, and almost all of them didn't want to speak out publicly. Quite a few signed the petition, including, yeah, Lucy Bartholomew, I thought was very brave. She signed it even though she was going to be doing one of the races and yeah, came in for criticism for that. And she gets criticized quite a lot, actually, quite unfairly. I think she's very brave. But yeah, and one of the athletes who actually, yeah, is again from your part of the world said, you know, they didn't feel their lifestyle was sustainable because they're an elite athlete and they didn't say how many times they flew, but she or he would, I don't know, I'm guessing fly two or three times a year. But I mean that typifies the unfortunate sort of place elite athletes find themselves, which I don't think it's fair to sort of say, right, you shouldn't ever fly. Or now most athletes, elite athletes, could probably reduce their footprint a bit and maybe do a bit better. But it's not, I don't think it's fair. You know, careers can be very short. A bit of sponsorship is hard to come by. It might all be over tomorrow. One slip on the trail, it could all be over. So I don't think it's fair to jump on sort of the elite sports people and the idea that we might is holding them back from speaking out and making more change. So I think that is a shame. And I guess the answer, I think the answer is to embrace that hypocrite word and go, yeah, there's something hypocritical about what I'm saying, but not really, because we're all, you know, we're all going to be hypocrites, and it's too late, you know, it's too late and too important not to speak out, I think.
It's like we said before, it's making a change. And for Kiwi and Aussie athletes that might fly 3-4 times to Europe, there's maybe a smarter way and go once and stay there for a couple of months, you know, for a season and come back. So that's a change, right? It's less flights. So I think every little step needs to be celebrated and acknowledged. And then that gives them the confidence that, hey, actually I am contributing, rather than it's a straight yes or no, I'm in or I'm not in. I mean, everyone does care. I think now you've recently announced a partnership between Green Runners and England Athletics, which I think is super exciting. What's that partnership?
Do you know what? I wasn't involved in that at all, and I don't know much about it. So the Green Runners, it was founded probably about 12 of us in the founding group. And what's great is there are different skills, there are different, we're all, you know, geographically different. I think all of us were in the UK to start with, although we're really spreading. And I must admit, while those sort of long discussions were going on, I was doing more of the UTMB stuff, and so there were some other people working, especially Nina Davies, working very hard behind the scenes, having long meetings with England Athletics. I think the idea is broadly that we would sort of be able to communicate more directly with running clubs, with some ideas about sustainability. I must admit, I've been distracted by the UTMB stuff, and then also we had an Adidas thing. We really didn't like this new sort of Adidas super shoe.
I was going to mention that earlier. You know, you talk about shoes for 500Ks. How about wear it once?
Yeah. I think we just thought that was horrendous and totally the wrong message. And unfortunately, to get back to the gloomy sport greenwashing stuff, Adidas were one of the first companies to go, oh, we make a shoe with some plastic, you know, rescued from the ocean and recycled. And there was a TV program here that showed that was probably not true. But then they bring out a shoe that's like, you know, you only went to pretty much wear for one race and then throw it away. So that typifies actually a lot of the sportswear companies that go, oh, we've got one sustainable shoe or one that sounds a bit better or has a slightly smaller footprint, but we'll carry on with everything else and actually make something that's worse. So yeah, so I was, me and a small group were busy on the UTMB and the Adidas stuff. And there were some other people doing the real work. I must admit, I'm quite embarrassed. I need to catch up on exactly what that is. But it's wonderful that England Athletics are, I suppose, embracing those ideas. And that could have a huge impact, actually, because there are a lot of, you know, they have a lot of members, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of runners. Look forward to seeing where that might go.
And we do need to congratulate Green Runners, maybe you, maybe not you, but the BBC Green Sport Awards nomination for Grassroots Organization of the Year. You didn't win, but that doesn't matter. I mean, to be a finalist is a huge accolade amongst some big hitters. Football obviously won on the night by the looks of it.
Yeah, and a certain cricketer did very well.
Pat Cummings, yes.
Yeah, he was named Athlete of the Year. I was pleased. Yeah, I was pleased he hadn't flown there for the award as well. So they had a video recording of him chatting by one of the Sydney beaches. He was great. In the video, he explained that, you know, he has to fly for his sport sometimes, but that's not holding him back either. I think we have to accept that, you know, sport careers are brief, but he'll have huge influence by speaking out and the foundation he's got there. We were hugely honoured to be nominated for the Grassroots Award. There were five main awards, but Jasmine Paris and I got to go to the BBC and hobnob with some very inspiring athletes and activists. And we were fairly beaten, I think, by this wonderful scheme in terrible, but I forget which African country. It may have been Mozambique, but it was a football league that. Was actually massively reducing the poaching in that area to zero so far this year, apparently, by creating a football league for men and another league for women. So we thought that was very cool. It was good. That was only the second time the BBC have done these awards. I think it's great that they do that. We were discussing afterwards how much of that really you know, how much does that really change things? But I think it's important. I think they're celebrating, yeah, they're celebrating green athletes and green initiatives and green, you know, sporting clubs. And they've got huge coverage, so they can, you know, put it out through the channels. I do think media should, you know, has to be doing stuff like that. But kudos to them, and we'll try and get renominated.
Absolutely. So let's expand on the Green Runners a little bit. On your website, you outline four key pillars to being a Green Runner, to put the planet first. What do they include?
Well, yes, this goes back a little bit to what we've been discussing in that we looked at where would a runner's footprint sort of be. That's CO2e footprint rather than footprint in the mud. But those three main areas would be the travel, your kit and your fueling. To me, actually the fourth pillar is the most important is speaking up. So to me, that's more the sort of nudging for system change. I appreciate that's, you know, that comes comfortably to some people and less comfortably to other people. And that's kind of where we got four pillars as well. Cause for example, I've got a friend who's really passionate about plastic waste. So, and he hassles all these companies all the time. That's his thing. Like, he's got really into that. Whereas, I don't know, for me, for example, it's kind of easier to speak out because, you know, I get interviewed by good folk like yourselves. And you know, it's easy for me to drop that into conversation, whether it comes, you know, even if it wasn't going to come up. So that's kind of easier. I have a small platform. All we ask of members is to make at least one pledge to improve in one of those areas. So we wanted to, we want as many people on board as possible. We had a really good discussion early on of like, yeah, we don't want to seem perfect, and we're not after people being perfect. We're just after progress. So like you alluded, Ben, like with say flights, if someone takes three flights a year, if they go, I don't know, this year I promised to only take two or even one, you know, we're not banning flights. We want people on board, and we'll meet people where they are. So there are no criteria or rules set on people other than you make a pledge to improve on at least one thing. So it's up to people to, yeah, do what they, and I had a good friend, an athlete of mine actually, who sort of, you know, she had a partner in another country, and, you know, meat has always been central to her diet. She, you know, she's from another country as well. And she was like, well, I can't join because of these things. And I said, no, you know, you're exactly the people we want. You know, you think about where you can improve either in those areas or somewhere else. Please come on board, because, and we've now got, over 1,000 people all around the world. I think we've shown recently we can have some impact, or at least get noticed. It's been really exciting, and you know, it's quite scary when you launch something. I'd never done anything like that, but to suddenly have loads of people, not backing us, but joining in with us, I suppose, and going, yes,
believing like in what you're standing for.
That's the word. Yeah, that's been really nice. Anyone who's interested, I'm pretty sure it's thegreenrunners.org
links will be in the show notes
.com for anyone interested, but it'll definitely be in the show notes.
Please come and join us.
But speaking of launching, you don't stop there. You've recently launched co-founded a newer initiative, Into Ultra. Tell us about that. Why Ultra? I mean, running is one thing. Let's get people moving, physically active, park run, nice and easy. No, let's get them into ultras.
Yes, no, that's a good point. Thank you for bringing that up. I must admit, it was more a friend who got in touch and said, let's do some more good in running, you know, away from the green, you know, the green stuff, you know, we're doing some things. And we've also got our friends, the Black Trail Runners. You know, we think they're doing amazing things with increasing diversity and inclusion, although there's work to do. And we also have something called She Races over here, which is, you know, as the name suggests, concentrating more on gender and trying to get equality in mostly in the events. My friend just still thought there might be ultimately ultra running. I suppose it is expensive or can be expensive. I guess the two main things are, I suppose, entry to races and all the equipment. And they're probably the two main things, although, you know, we're finding, you know, interesting, you know, some people might need some coaching but can't afford it. So we managed to get a bit of a fund going. Um, and yeah, again, it's more his work than me, and there's a handful of us now. But yeah, we've helped so far 40 athletes so far this year.
Wow.
Whether it's what's been amazing actually is we didn't anticipate. We just thought we had this fund and we'd have to spend it quickly. Well, spend it on, you know, entries and so on. But actually, we realized lots of events and brands and other coaches and other experts volunteered their services for free or gave massive discounts, so we can actually make that fund last a lot longer than we anticipated. So that's one. So we're still looking for people. Unfortunately, it is geographically a UK thing for now, but yeah, so that's been really rewarding. We've taken on 40 people, and you know, they've had different desires and wishes, and but yeah, we're just trying to make, and we got 50% female. I'd have to update you on our diversity statistics, but it was at least 20%, I believe, last time I checked. So yeah, encouraging, can do better. But yeah, we just thought we've had an amazing experience in ultra running, and it's not available to all people. So, you know, can we just bring down the barriers a bit, the financial barriers, and yeah, so far so good. But yeah, we want to help more people, and I guess we want to reach further out. We're you know, try and get the people on the fringes of running, I suppose, and teach them how much fun it is to run 100 miles and really hurt your legs.
That's debatable, but anyway.
But that's great, though. I mean, there's so many physical and mental benefits from participating in activities, and with ultra marathon running, you're also getting the added benefit of immersing yourself in nature, which also has phenomenal impacts on health. You've kind of alluded to it. Apart from applying for the support, you're also looking for people to get involved, and there's countless ways to get involved. It's not just about donating. So, you know, for coaches that are interested, or kit donations, etc. Like, what are you most looking for at the moment for people to support this?
Oh gosh, good question. Well, we're currently. Yeah, actually, at the moment, we can't take on fresh donations until we're registered as a charity, which we've applied for. Once that's come through, yeah, I mean, donations welcome for sort of next year. I think we're okay for this year. Donations welcome for next year. I guess, yeah, lots of events have offered free places, and quite a few coaches and stuff have got in touch. And what we've tried to do as well with equipment is try to, you know, good secondhand things. We've tried to make it sustainable as well. So we got some companies, the Pre-Loved Sports are one of them, and the Reaction Collective are two organizations that are, yeah, reusing kit, repairing it. And sort of, so we're getting, yeah, good quality. We get the shoes new because, yeah, I mean, people are going to wear shoes a lot from Innovate. But yeah, a lot of kit. We seem to be doing all right. I don't know if we need. we would actually like to hear from people who they think it might apply to. Unfortunately, for now, it's just UK focused. But that'll be a discussion we'll certainly have about how we can branch it out. But yeah, no, people have been really helpful so far. We hadn't anticipated how helpful. But yeah, I guess we're keen to hear from people who, especially UK for now, who might feel they might benefit.
I think that's one of the things that we can all agree is the trail running community is a very supportive community. And I think in some respect, it's probably no surprise that you've had the support that you have. Because I've run for years, I've run I call it like a mentorship program through my coaching. And I don't do 40, I'll do maybe one a year. That's enough. But, you know, I'll reach out to a couple of event organizers and say, look, can I get a couple of free entries or something for this program? And they're too easy. You know, they're very, very supportive.
Yeah.
It's a community that I think is very supportive. You know, trail runners in general, you know, you run, everyone's always sometimes too much, but always willing to offer their input and so on. So I think, yeah, I think it's inspiring for others that might want to set something up in their part of the world, you know, of a similar sort of concept. Let's circle back. So we've discussed so many amazing sort of initiatives and lifestyle changes, behavioral changes, and so on. Let's bring it back to the very beginning. As trail runners, or let's remove the word trail runners, as outdoors people, people that go out hiking, tramping, running, mountain biking, ocean swimming, people that immerse in nature through physical activity. Why is the connection between that and climate action so important for that particular group of people?
I mean, it's interesting, actually, because, yeah, when I first sort of started getting involved in the debate, it's kind of like, saving the planet is one of those sort of phrases that gets bandied around. And actually, you realize kind of the scientists tell me anyway, like the planet will be OK, actually. We're just making it unlivable for ourselves. So we're the ones who will be in trouble. The planet will probably rebound. It's had seismic extinction events before, the obvious one being, when the dinosaurs were wiped out, the planet rebounded and survived. So in a way, it's us, we're making it unlivable in certain places. However, I mean, Chamonix, where UTMB takes place, is an incredible place to see that dramatic change, because there's some famous glaciers in that valley. I can't remember off the top of my head the exact stats of the reduction of the ice on them, but it's staggering. And even on Monday at this BBC Sport Awards, actually, someone mentioned this. Yeah, it was a skier. She mentioned it was something like when she'd been there. It was something along the lines of when she'd been to see this glacier in her youth, she'd climbed 5 steps. So there's a staircase next to it to get to the bottom of it. And now it's 50 steps. She has to climb 50 steps to get to the bottom of the glacier, because that's how much it's receded up the mountain. And this is one of the famous glaciers in the Chamonix Valley. So there you get a really visual idea of how the landscape is changing. So there's almost, they're not separate, are they? But there's almost two things. One is, yeah, it's actually us that will, we're making the place unlivable, but these places are changing. The classic thing in Britain that we're concerned about is, yeah, rising sea levels, because that will obviously, people will have to move out of homes, but it's sort of the coast is slowly crumbling into the sea in various places. I think we see it more, maybe not so much in Britain, but I hear from runners in Europe, they see the changing snow line, for example. It's different now. And then what I alluded to earlier, I suppose, is that in some places it's not safe to run now. It's and you must, especially in Australia, get that. So I mean, you've got both the wildfires and just heat, increase in temperatures, which we had our hottest ever day last summer here, and then we've had a really weird sort of late summer that's felt like we've been in autumn for 3 months here. I don't know, hopefully there's enough reason in there for people to realize, yeah, they're seeing it in front of their eyes. But I think one of the best things we can do is almost, grab a friend who doesn't go bushwalking, and take the bushwalking and get them to care as well. I sometimes forget, not everyone does that, because most of my friends end up having similar interests, and you sort of think everyone does, and then I suppose you realize not everyone does. So grab a friend from the city and drag them up a hill, maybe a smaller hill to start with. I think it's really strong link between, if you care, if you enjoy being outdoors and you care, then you're going to care about this. I don't think I've met anyone actually. It'd be interesting. Yeah, do you think you know anyone who loves the outdoors but somehow isn't involved? Doesn't care about that?
I could say yes, because I live in central Queensland, where there's a whole bunch of people who love going fishing, but they don't really give a crap about the environment. Like, you see them driving home from the jetty and they're chucking paper out the car windows, and anyway, that's a topic for a different day, but for the athletes of the world,
for trail running in particular, I think for athletes there's a realization they've got to make. In the last year, how many events themselves have been impacted by climatic events, and that enough should tell us there's a problem. I went to Australia last year. I did a new event, Ultra Trail Kosciuszko, Summit Kosciuszko, in December, expecting a summer vacation. It was minus 10 degrees, covered in snow, course change.
Wow.
That's saying something. Tarawera Ultra Marathon, iconic event here, course change because of landslips, because we've had absolute record rain. Our ground is so saturated. We've lost crops. I can go on and on and on. So much that 2 ultras, 3 ultras Two cancelled, one course change became a loop, Tarawera, because of landslips. Mm. We've lost track. So you talk about, are some trails safe? No, they're not. Some have been washed out completely. We've lost them into rivers, into the ocean. So the impact is there. We're seeing it. We don't have to go up high mountains to see glaciers retreating. We don't need to go and you know, it's not just climatic events. It's also the food system. You can see the impacts of deforestation in Australia as well for beef, cattle farming and so on. So you can see the impacts. It doesn't have to be just climatic. It can be the way we're living and what we, how we're consuming, mining, farming, etc. It's just, there's a disconnect. I think people like yourself, hugely inspiring, because your way of activism is communication and it's by doing. And you're showing that you don't have to give up your record-breaking runs and epic adventures and going to other events. And if we want to call ourselves a bit hypocritical, sure, but we're still making change. So the work that you do, these amazing initiatives that you're part of, Green Runners, Into Ultra now, I think we forgot to mention that your background is journalism. You know, you write. You write well. You write amazing. I mean, I'm holding this your latest book here.
It's, I wouldn't go that far.
On our recommended reading list. Highly recommend people to read the We Can't Run Away From This. But the way you present things just makes sense and gives us the confidence that, okay, I don't have to do it all. But if I do something, I'm a part of that community that wants to bring about change and perhaps make this place a little less, in Dr. Corey Bradshaw's words, this place a little bit less shit. And I love that because it's a reality, right? So, Damien, thank you so much for, A, the work that you do, the activism, the way you speak out, the information you share. Give Damien a follow on Instagram and so on. It just brings awareness, and that inspires change, and it gives confidence to even people like myself with my own initiatives, Athletes for Nature. It's like, okay, maybe I'm not the only one trying to do something through this community. There's people doing it amazing, and I'm going to get inspiration for that. So, Damien, thank you so much. It's the amount that you do, the amount that you're going to continue doing. You're a beacon in our community.
Yikes! Well, I mean, that's incredibly generous. Thank you, but. You know, thank you, you two, incredibly, because yeah, you're using your platform. You're doing amazing things, and I think that's part of it. Actually, is working out what are your strengths or what do you prefer doing? Because not everyone wants to go on the street and wave a flag around, or not everyone wants to talk publicly. So it's working out. Yeah, what are your strengths, your skills? Like I say, with my friend, he wants to hassle these companies about the plastic waste, which is great. But I feel like I can do things in a different area. But you guys are doing amazing things. So thank you. And keep it up.
Thank you for listening to the Lentil Intervention podcast. If you found this interesting, make sure you subscribe and share it with your friends.